This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, a top al-Qaeda operative admits planning the 9/11 attacks, and Senate Democrats budget funds for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Joining today's panel are political consultant Walter Fields, economist and author Julianne Malveaux, president and CEO of Last Word Productions Incorporated, and Ron Christie, VP of the lobbying firm DC Navigators and former special assistant to President George W. Bush. Welcome, everyone. Including Julianne, I understand you're sitting around an airport somewhere.
Stuck in Atlanta at the Crown Room, yes.
All right. Well, just hang in there. So let me go to you first. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, long said to be the mastermind of the September 11th attacks, confessed to them at a military hearing held in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, on Saturday, according to a transcript released by the Pentagon yesterday. He acknowledged full or partial responsibility for more than 30 other terror attacks or plots. He said, quote, "I was responsible for the 9/11 operation from A to Z." He had a kind of rambling statement. He's a chief aide to Osama bin Laden. He also said, "I'm not happy that 3,000 have been killed in America. I feel sorry even. I don't like to kill children and kids. Now, what does this really mean for the Bush administration, if anything?
Well, certainly there's some validation here. This is an aid to Osama bin Laden, and so some of what all of our efforts to hold people, these secret hearings and all of that, this gives it some validation. At the same time, this man is someone who's known for making grandiose claims, and so he's claimed 31 full or partial responsibility in 31 terrorist acts, including attempts on the lives of both Presidents Clinton and I believe on presidents. So he's made several claims that we're not sure we can validate. I think that this is the tip of the iceberg, and certainly so much of this, Farai, has been kept secret. What has been released is just part of what's out there. There's another concern, and that concern is how he was treated. Some of the coverage has talked about the fact that he may have been beaten or something else to get a confession. In this hearing, we heard that he'd made other statements that he now denies. So we've got to take it all with a grain of salt, but certainly we're getting closer to the bottom of some of this. And the question I have is, to what end? Now that we have this information, what are we going to do with it?
Ron, that is one of the key questions, and also still on the table, where is Osama bin Laden? What do you think about all those?
Well, let me answer Julianne's question. The question is, where do we go from here? This particular hearing at the Guantanamo Bay facility was something that was called a Combatant Status Review Tribunal, which was a proceeding to determine whether or not Khalid Sheikh Mohammed could be tried as an enemy combatant. The evidence that he claims that he was responsible for the 9/11 attacks and these other terrorist plots around the world will be used against him. And of course, in my opinion, this is going to pave the way for him to be tried as an enemy combatant. Where do we go from here? We go from here to try to bring those individuals to justice who tried to either perpetrate attacks against the United States or who in fact planned or carried out those attacks against the United States. And I'm very, very pleased that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, in a military tribunal, properly endorsed by the Congress, signed into law by the President, has had his time to offer his testimony, and now he will be tried in a court of law and be held responsible for his actions.
Walter, Julianne raised some concerns about how Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was treated or other prisoners are treated. Should we be concerned about that at this point?
Well, I think we certainly should. I don't trust any of this. The fact of the matter is that September 11, 2001 was now 6 years ago. There's a cold trail here, and I think this country is going to have a difficult time really finding who was truly responsible for the events of 9/11. I think this is a man who is prone to a lot of boasting. I think this is a man who we don't know what type of conditions he's experienced while in U.S. custody. So I wouldn't trust anything that he admits to at this point. The problem here is that the administration veered left when it should have stayed straight on course in trying to pursue leads to hold those responsible for September 11th.
I think Walter, how do you know that? Give one specific example of how
we're
you know
in,
the
in
United
Iraq.
States government.
We're
yes,
in Iraq.
We are in Iraq. But
we're
prove,
in Iraq.
You give
we're,
one
that's
statement
the left
where
turn.
You can prove.
That's now,
Walter,
the left
how can
turn.
Gentlemen,
that,
you can disagree, but let's
turn.
Do it at a little lower volume.
How
that's
can you say?
That's the left turn. I'm saying it. If you listen, I'm saying it. We veered left. We've allowed 6 years to elapse since September 11th. We didn't go after Osama bin Laden. We captured some functionaries. They are now in custody. We can't trust anything that they say because we don't even know the conditions under which they've been held. So my point is that, you know, if you took this to sort of normal police work, detective work, 6 years is a long time to try to bring anyone to justice. And that evidence has grown very cold. And I don't think we're ever going to find out the true facts behind 9/11.
You know, Walter is so exactly right about the veer left. Ron, I know you don't want to hear it, but here's the bottom line. Even the president of the United States has at this point just about admitted that Iraq is a mistake. It's chaos over there. The Senate today is going to be looking at some proposal to withdraw by 2008. The nation is against this. If we had steered our course regarding Osama bin Laden, we might know a lot more about what has happened, and we don't know. And, you know, Human Rights Watch, so many other organizations have talked about the lack of transparency. We can talk about a duly whatever tribunal, but the lack of transparency, especially in the way these people have been treated. We cannot ignore that. They may be enemies. He may have confessed to 31 crimes that he may or may not have committed. But, you know, if someone is being held, as Walter says, for 3 to 4 years under what kind of circumstances, you might say anything.
What surprises me, and this is why I love this show so much, that we can have a spirit of discourse, is that my two friends suggest that, oh, we veered to the left, or this should be a police matter. That is entirely the wrong way to pursue this. This is not a police matter. This is a military matter. There are those who would believe that, oh, we can just pursue this as if it was a police investigation and we can follow leads. No. The United States of America was under attack. The United States of America was attacked, and the United States military, with the full force of the United States military, is pursuing and bringing those individuals to justice for these terrible crimes that were perpetrated against this country. But to suggest that going to Iraq was a mistake, or, oh, the United States, they should have gone after Osama bin Laden and they let him go, that is untrue, that is unwarranted, and that is not borne out by the facts.
Guys, let me just interject. No. Guys, let me just jump in.
Party as well believe this was a mistake. You know, we're there and we've got to figure out how to clean it up. Colin Powell said when we went there, if you go in there, you break it, you're going to have to fix it. That's what we're dealing with. But
Julianne, we're about to move on to a new topic that I think will give you great satisfaction. But first, I have to do a little housekeeping, because we have been hearing from Julianne Malveaux, economist and author, president and CEO of Last Word Productions. In case you're just tuning in, this is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We also have been listening in quite a rapid succession to Ron Christie, VP of the lobbying firm DC Navigators, former special assistant to President George W. Bush, political consultant Walter Fields. And so the reason I wanted to jump in and transition is because the Senate Democrats have unveiled their 2008 budget with a few surprises. Now, they're planning to boost spending for uninsured children, students, veterans, but they do not intend to cut defense funds or the money for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Julianne, are you surprised?
I'm not surprised, but I am disappointed by many aspects of this budget. It's a really unrealistic budget. It's good that some of the social spending is being restored, but certainly I think it's basically weak to have all this rhetoric around pulling out of Iraq and then to maintain the president's budget and essentially to give him everything he wants. However, let's just acknowledge it's a politically awkward time. We just heard about what's happened at Walter Reed and all the inefficiencies there. There's tremendous concern about the troops. And so while you may oppose the war, I mean, the schizophrenia of opposing the war but supporting the troops is a schizophrenia that is policy paralyzing for many people. So I would imagine that the Democrats have felt that you cannot, you know, basically attack the troops by saying that you're going to take money out. But, you know, you've got a defense budget that has a $49 billion increase. You've got $142 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan. And this is just huge money at the same time that you're looking at some social spending that, although boosted by 4% in this new budget, is still significantly cut. And they're keeping the Bush tax cuts, which is insanity.
Ron, what about that? Keeping the Bush tax cuts, where are we going to have money in the future to pay for social programs and for any future military action?
Well, the Bush tax cuts have done a remarkable job to stimulate the economy. If you go back all the way back to August of 2003, this economy has created 7.5 million jobs. The February of 2007 of this year was the 42nd month of consecutive pro-growth economic growth. Where you say, where are we going to get the money? Under the Bush tax cuts, the United States Treasury has had more money that has gone out, that has been received for revenues collected for the highest period in American history. So to suggest that the Bush tax cuts, oh, these tax cuts are hurting the economy, quite to the contrary, they have stimulated the economy, they've brought more revenue in, which will allow more social spending to provide education, health care for children, other vital programs. I think it's a very wise move and a cognizant move.
Deficit, Ron? How do we end up with a deficit higher than
Julianne, let Ron finish, please.
I think it's a cognizant move by the Senate Democrats who recognize that cutting off these tax cuts before they expire in 2010 would be a mistake. That's why I think the Senate Democrats left this money in. That's why I think these tax cuts will remain in place.
So, Walter, you want to jump in?
Yeah, you know, they left the tax cuts in because they're chicken. You know, the fact of the matter is that this economy has created a bunch of lousy, low-wage jobs. It's increased the disparity between the rich and the poor. The fact that they won't move on the Defense Department or cut funding for the war is because the rhetoric of patriotism has diluted real debate in this country. So you have a bunch of members of Congress who are fearful for being called unpatriotic if they do what we all know they should do, which is stop funding this disaster in Iraq. You know, we talked in the last segment about, you know, this war and I'm steamed because we have actually, this is the equivalent of going after the punter on a football field instead of going after the running back. We've chosen sort of the weakest cat to go after, and now we're wondering why after 6 years, and I'm sitting in New York, the city that got attacked on 9/11, and we have no clue as to who committed that vicious act, but we still have apologists who want to make excuses for an administration that even this public now, Republicans and Democrats, agree should be held responsible for the disaster we see overseas. So when you start talking about this budget, the reason why they can't move on this budget is because we've got a public that's been utterly confused by the rhetoric of patriotism. So anytime you talk about cutting spending for the military, you're hurting our troops. No, what's hurting our troops is that every day that they're in there, we're putting their lives in danger, and the chances that they're going to come back alive are slim because of our irresponsibility.
All right, I want to move on to one last topic. President George W. Bush's Latin American tour. It's managed to bring out some anger in some citizens. He was faced with protesters at just about every stop, including Guatemala, Colombia, and Mexico. And while addressing an audience in Mexico, President Bush promised to find a solution for the biggest issue between the neighboring countries, immigration.
There are decent, hardworking, honorable citizens of Mexico who want to make a living for their families. And so, Mr. President, my pledge to you and your government, but more importantly, the people of Mexico, is I will work as hard as I possibly can to pass comprehensive immigration reform.
Now, all that said, Mexico's president still had a response. Felipe Calderón made it clear he was against the building of a 700-mile fence along the U.S.-Mexico border. He likened it to the Berlin Wall. Ron, is that a fair analogy?
No, that's a silly analogy. The one thing that makes a country is the sovereignty and the ability to protect its borders. If the United States wants to put up fences and put up borders to protect the southern border, to protect the northern border, that's the responsibility of the United States government. And the fact of the matter is that the United States needs to work with Mexico and work with our friends in Latin America to find ways to create meaningful jobs, well-paying jobs in these individual countries to stem the flow of illegal immigration. I am all in favor of immigration. I think that America is a melting pot, and the thing that makes America the best country in the world is our specific diversity. But to suggest that the United States cannot protect its borders, not just from an immigration standpoint, but to keep out those who want to come in here, terrorists and other individuals, mob folks, people who want to run drugs, I think is an absolutely silly and irresponsible statement.
Julianne, what about the economic ramifications of not having undocumented immigrants here? We've seen in some towns, particularly southern towns, that when there are immigration raids, entire industry shut down. At this point, aren't our economies intertwined?
They're very intertwined. Ron is spouting nonsense as usual when he uses the word silly to describe a fence that's going to cost billions of dollars to construct and makes no sense. The Berlin Wall analogy is very apt. What we know is that undocumented people are here doing work in some cases that Americans will not do. Many of them are working below the minimum wage, at or near the minimum wage. They're unprotected from any kind of labor codes. But, you know, as President Calderon said, they're picking our lettuce. The nation would have scurvy if we didn't have undocumented people here to basically deal with some of our agriculture and some of those other things. We want to have it both ways on immigration. That's our problem. On one hand, we talk about globalization, and we want to dump our products. We want to export whatever we want to, wherever we want to. But then we want to have fences when we're talking about people. I really don't know what the answer is because there's so many human tragedies and stories. But I do know that if tomorrow every undocumented person disappeared, we would have a very different country with much higher prices for agricultural produce. We'd have a whole lot of people with nobody to watch their children. We'd have a whole lot of homes that would go unpainted, a lot of lawns that would go untreated. We need to think about that and really just, you know, put our thinking caps on about what we do. This is one place where President Bush, and as you know, I'm no fan of his, but he has the potential. He's talked about working with Senator Edward Kennedy of leaving some kind of a positive legacy against his track record of failures. As the former governor of Texas, he has some understanding of some of these issues, and I think he could bring a sensibility to bear, but he can't seem to get his party to move on this issue.
Julianne, I'm going to have to jump in because Walter is going to get the last word. We've got a minute, Walter.
Thank you. Well, you know, I didn't think this president could get any lower. But when you go overseas and use the term social justice, it's an insult. When you begin to see what's happened in this country and you have a president that dares to go overseas and use the term social justice to describe U.S. foreign policy in Latin America, that takes the cake. And I think Julianne is absolutely right. You know, we espouse globalization, but that only means products. That only means what we can sell to other countries. But when it comes to people that we depend upon today, all of a sudden, we want to build a fence. The funny thing about that fence is even people in those states know that fence is not going to work. What do you do about the northern border of this country? Do we erect a fence across the northern border? How do we keep people from the eastern and western borders? It is the silliest thing that one could even imagine, and it's a waste of money. But
and
once again, it's a waste of money. It's
and
a
again,
reactionary
it's the United
move.
States Congress who decided to pass a law
that put
a fence in there, and for you guys to suggest that it's silly to protect our southern border from those who want to hurt us, I think that is an
irresponsible
statement. You guys are so rowdy today. Y'all making my job hard. So in our New York Bureau, political consultant Walter Fields at NPR HQ, Ron Christie, VP of the lobbying firm DC Navigators, former special assistant to President George W. Bush, in the crown room of the Delta Terminal in Atlanta, economist and author Julianne Malvo. Thank you all, and too much coffee this morning, folks. Next on News and Notes, how Africans bound for slavery found freedom on pirate ships, and you tell us what you love and hate about us in letters.